Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle. And today is January 12th, 2021. And welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. It's Holy WASDE Day, as I like to say, and I'm joined by two guests today. Nicole Thomas, Vice President, Information Services and Sales. Hello, Nicole.
Hey, Michael. How's it going?
I'm good. And we also have, guess who? Kevin Combs, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, guys. Doing good.
It's good to have you guys on the podcast today, and we're going to talk about the WASDE. And I just have to start with, I'm very, very thankful for the IQ platform.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you why. You know, it makes my job so easy because that silly report is so long and so many numbers. And I can just go on that platform right at 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time and get a quick recap. And then you two write an awesome recap within an hour or two after that. And I can just read that and go from there. It's just amazing.
I know.
I love it. Thank you, guys.
Utilizing technology, who would think?
Unbelievable.
Somehow, Nicole, I think we're getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah, I know. I do think so as well.
You are. Well, you know, you have to prioritize your strengths to strengths, whatever they say, right?
Yep.
Whatever. I don't know. Making this up. So anyway, why don't we dive right into it? And we'll start with you, Nicole. Saw a lot of negatives on that little sheet I saw on the IQ platform, giving me a quick recap. Mm-hmm. What the heck did they do?
At first, I thought you were talking about the quote board. And I'm like, no, you definitely didn't see any negatives.
No. The quote board was very positive.
Very positive. Very green. Yeah. We're a very green quote board today.
Yeah.
So, you know, corn. Yeah, fun times. What do we close up? 25 points for anything remotely related to the 2020-21 crop. Double digits elsewhere. Again, you know, with the unexpected, I guess, is the easy way to sum it up. But, you know, we were talking about technology, and you know where I think we need more technology.
Is it going to help? Is it going to remove some of these surprises? If so, I'm all in.
Yes. You know, I would like to see more technology in being utilized to determine corn production in any given year and yields, because we saw another reduction there. We saw a 3 bushel per acre reduction to yield. And that basically dropped our production number for 2021 by 300 million bushels. Now, the numbers are always firmed up in January, okay? And they do usually change a little bit from the October and November report. But the average change over the last 10 years between the November report and the January report, as far as corn production is concerned, has been about 64 million bushels.
Wow.
So in other words, usually USDA has a pretty good handle on production by that November report.
Yep.
But for 2021, because 2020 is in its name, and plus 21 might be interesting too, the change between November and today's report was lower by 325 million bushels.
Jeez Louise.
Kind of reminiscent of September. You know, you kind of remember in the September report, got the market very active. All right, well, we've got another one of those. And then we also saw beginning stocks lowered by 76 million bushels, and that was due to a revision to feed demand for 2019-20 that came in at a little over 5.9 billion bushels, and that was up by 474 million bushels from 2018-19, so a big jump there. Now, I would say that change is a little more understandable in the sense of how unusual things were for the livestock industry, you know, the issues with processing capacity, how that kind of worked its way through the system. And that category is always a little tricky anyway. And we usually don't get a firm number until a little later, or I should say past the year being referenced. So that one was interesting. But, you know, I can't curse on this podcast, because that would not be professional. And I may remember a time many, many moons ago where a mere acronym was used to express
that's true
a sentiment. And I won't say that acronym, but I will say the acronyms award for today's reporting was probably corn stocks as of December 1st. And analysts were expecting a number close to about 11.75 billion bushels prior to the report's release. And instead, we got 11.3 billion bushels as of December 1st. So basically indicating that that September to November 20th or 2020 disappearance at 4.78 billion bushels was higher than the year prior. Mm. And I think that was driven by exports and feed demand. Again, kind of having a hard time to peg that. But as far as exports are concerned, recall we had lots of purchases of corn by the Chinese, and it looks like those shipments had amounted to about a little over 3.6 million metric tons by the beginning of December. That's how much we had shipped. And total cumulative marketing year shipments were about 61% above that point in 2019-20. So strong export demand definitely played a role in that disappearance number. But as I said, the feed piece could have made that a little complicated as well. And then globally, Argentine and Brazilian production were also lowered by 1.5 and 1 million metric tons to 47.5 and 109 million metric tons, respectively. And the problem is this may not be enough of a reduction. And the market may have been responding to that a bit with the futures activity today as well.
Ooh,
you've
wow.
got some private forecasters pegging Brazilian production as low as 102, 103. million metric tons. So big difference there. And some of those forecasters also projecting Argentine production closer to 45 million metric tons, maybe even below. Either way, they're well below what the USDA's current projection is. So that will certainly be something to follow when we're looking for next month's exciting WASDE report. But in general, that's what we got with corn. And as I said, markets rallied pretty strongly today off of these reports. So you want to talk about soybeans?
I do. Do we have any good news over there?
Well, depends on what you determine good news. If you're a farmer and you want $14 beans, then this is great news. You know, it's all about perspective, sir.
Touche. Touche.
But they're at least closer to expectations.
Yes. Yes, they were. That's a very true. Valid point, Kevin. And absolutely, Mike, we got lower ending stocks, domestic ending stocks, 35 million bushels lower to 140 million, which was right in the range of expectations. Very clear. I think the actual average for a bevy of projections was something like 139. So super close there. That gives us a stocks to use ratio of 3.1%. And that's the lowest it's been since 2013-14. Now, the culprits there, along with slightly lower production, so they reduced yield on beans as well. But the big factors there were related to stronger demand in the two major categories of crush and exports. And with crush, you know, we've seen record-setting levels thus far this marketing year, and we're seeing strong demand for soybean meal exports. So that's certainly helping to drive that. And then in the case of soybean exports, you know, we could still see some upward revisions down the road because the total commitment as of the week ending December 31st was a little under 54.8 million metric tons. And that's about 90% of the revised projection. So we're still really close to that number. And you know, bean supplies from South America are running about a month behind schedule, just based on the late plantings and slow development with the weather there. And when you consider the U.S. dollar's pretty weak, there's more expected demand from China. We could keep that import demand directed at the U.S. for a while longer than normal and add a few more sales to that balance sheet when it's all said and done. And speaking of South America, Argentina's production was only lowered by 2 million metric tons to 48 million. And Brazilian production was left unchanged at 133. And these two may be sort of demonstrating that the USDA is still a bit behind the curve with these projections. Depending on how the weather plays out in both regions, as we've seen some improvement of late, and there may have potentially been some acreage changes that haven't been accounted for yet after issues with planting corn, getting beans in the ground instead. But again, forecasters out there suggesting Brazil's production could be sub 130 million and Argentina could be closer to 46 or 47. So we could see, again, see additional changes down the road. And then as far as soybean oil is concerned, obviously higher crush allowed for the upward revision to soybean oil production. That's now pegged at a little over 25.5 billion pounds. Demand was increased by 100 million pounds for biodiesel and 100 million pounds for food use. And this is a little interesting considering the ongoing effects of COVID and the strength in prices for soybean oil as well. Now, I'm not doubting that the biodiesel's up. And 8.2 billion doesn't seem too unlikely considering how resilient that category has been throughout the pandemic. So that one, okay. But the increase to food use seems at least a little premature. I think we've got, you know, restrictions all over the country for restaurants. Folks still aren't traveling like normal for the most part. And food service channels still lag, you know, normal consumption in some places. So my only guess here is that they're considering substitution for maybe canola oil based on prices. You know, even with this rally, soybean oil is still cheaper. I'm just not sure I'd be ready to make that assumption just yet. So that's something to keep in mind following demand moving forward. And one last thing on soybean oil. U.S. soybean oil ending stocks dropped 75 million pounds to 1.814 billion. That gives us stocks to use of 7%. Interestingly, this is near parity with 2018-19 when soybean oil prices averaged a little over 28 cents per pound. In fact, 2021 global soy oil ending stocks are currently projected at 4.72 million metric tons, and that's up 630,000 metric tons, or I should say 630,000 metric tons higher than global ending stocks were in 2019-20. And at that point, we had stocks to use of 7.4% versus the 7.9% we have for the current marketing year. So what I think this helps to illustrate is that the run-up in soybean oil futures is more a factor of strength and tightness, of course, in soybeans than underlying factors specific to soybean oil. So we'll have to follow crude soy oil basis pretty closely to see if it confirms tightness or if it ends up coming under pressure later, being more indicative of the just sort of the domestic scenario, supply and demand scenario, than necessarily, you know, keeping pace with what's happening on the futures market. So that'll be something to watch here for the next few months.
Got it. Okay, great. Good recap, Nicole. Let's shift over to sugar. And Kevin, what do they do on sugar this month?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to top Nicole's interesting comments, because sugar is just a little bit more boring than the grains complex right now. But anyway, we did get a few changes, and ones that, you know, we've been anticipating and waiting on really for a couple of months. And the big one was beet production. So the USDA last couple months had been lowering beet production, and in December dropped it down to 4.859 million short tons raw value. And this month they raised it 133,000 tons. And, you know, kind of looking at the numbers, the big thing they cited was higher recovery rate on sucrose. So apparently they're using below average numbers, because that was one of the things we've been looking at, was trying to figure out why the number was so low. And recovery rate using a normal number kind of got us to this 4.95 5 million ton type of crop, and USDA came right in the middle of that range. And then One of the other big changes was production in Louisiana. So after all the hurricanes and tropical storm activity, knocking cane over by winds, all the rains, kept thinking, okay, that crop's going to get smaller, that crop's going to get smaller. And lo and behold, Louisiana has come through with a pretty good crop. And so the USDA ratcheted up production, 62,000 tons. You know, that crop will be completed here in a few weeks. So they have some pretty good data and have a lot of confidence in that number. So Louisiana almost at 1.9 million tons, just 14,000 tons below, and just a little bit below the 18-19 crop now. With those changes, they also had a little bit of adjustments on imports, which this has been going back and forth over the last few months.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's attributed to customs corrections. So they're trying to decide what happened. And, you know, they extended the quotas 1 month, allowing late entry on some of the additional sugar they allowed last year. And they've gone kind of back and forth whether that sugar was coming in 1920 or 2021 or not at all. And this month, the latest was they moved a bunch of it back, 81,000 tons back into 1920, dropped a little bit back out of 2021, basically offsetting. And so net-net with the changes, we had, you know, 196,000 ton total increase in production. After the changes in imports, et cetera, we end up with 111,000 tons additional supply. And it brings our stocks to use ratio up to a, you know, pretty healthy 14.4%. So What does that all that mean?
I don't know, Kevin. What does all that mean?
Not a whole lot in the grand scheme of things for prices for this year, because most of the sugar is already booked.
Yeah, not much happening, Kevin.
The market is pretty much set, obviously, for this year.
Yeah.
And not much happening at this point. Every customers are booked. We are seeing, you know, people that need...
Most industrial business is done, isn't it?
People need additional sugar. You know, prices are much higher, and they continue to trend higher. But I think, you know, the additional supplies should bring some relief, especially those that have been watching the 16 market, as, you know, we've seen that trade typically between 25.5 cents and maybe up to 27 cents under the amended suspension agreements. And this year, obviously, we've been going up above 29 cents. So bigger beet crop, people might have see a little bit less demand, obviously, from cane refining industry this year. And import-wise, you know, it's a lot of imports still coming in. We have some inventories transferring over. I think this looks a little bit better picture. But the one thing we continue to watch also is Mexico. And while their crop is progressing fairly nicely, I see, you know, potentially some upside on the USDA's estimate of 5.95 million tons based on what we're seeing. But so far, they've only produced a little under 100,000 tons of below 92 pole sugar to ship, you know, 75% of their quota has to be below 72 to ship in bulk vessels. And that sugar's still not widely available and ready to ship yet. So I think it's going to take a couple months to still soften things up a little bit further from the raw sugar market.
Got it. Anything else on sugar, Kevin?
You know, I think that's pretty much it. You know, we're still kind of in the doldrums before we start talking about 2022. Typically, we start, you know, getting closer to the colloquium, and we have more and more conversations, start hearing some things happening. But with the colloquium being online this year, it's going to have to be done the old-fashioned way over the phones instead of in-person meetings this year.
Got it. Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. Thank you, Kevin, for a nice recap on sugar. Thank you, Nicole, on corn and soybeans. We're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. And remind everybody, like I started, if you're not an IQ subscriber to our platform, let us know. We'll get you signed up and you can give it a test drive. A lot of great information and intelligence to make your guys' jobs easier and more productive, as we like to say. And as I also like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude and live every moment. Until next time, take care, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye now. That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favel's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favel.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.